I am Hans.
And I am Franz, and we just want to pop your lock.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Do appreciate it. If you'd like to be on the program with a question or a comment, my number is 888-914-9149. That's still the number even if you don't want to be on the air, but that's the number to dial to be on the air, 888-914-9149. We've got lots to talk about this morning. I am interested in what's on your mind, so don't be shy, 888-914-9149. Let's start off with Tim in Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning, Tim.
Hi, thank you for taking my call so quickly.
You're welcome.
What is a man supposed to do when it feels like the levee has broken and evil is everywhere all at once, and we don't want to, we want to be good soldiers for Christ, and we want to be good protectors for others and ourselves, and so we don't want to put our heads in the sand. I mean, the war is coming to us. So, but how do we process this without being undone?
Very good question, and quite frankly, it's the same question that any Catholic could have asked in any generation of the Church for the last 2,000 years. This just happens to be our generation. So, if you consider what we're going through now, comparing it to other epochs in Church history, you can see in some cases it was much worse in other areas and at other times. So I offer you that by way of perspective as you make your way through this time frame with what's going on here and now. I think the answer to your question is what it has always been, is stay close to Jesus. Have faith in him. Be a good husband. Be a good father. Say your prayers. Give alms. Pray every day. Our Lady says pray the rosary every day, so I'll add that in a particular way, pray the rosary every day. Be virtuous, go to Mass on Sunday, and more often if you can, and do that. And if you do that, it doesn't really matter what's happening around you. If the levee has broken yet again, as it has many times before, okay, well, you're on the bark of Peter. You're on that rock upon which Christ is building his church, and he doesn't promise easy sailing. He says that it will be afflicted with floods and waves and rain and wind that will beat against it, but it will not fall because it has been built solidly on a rock. So I think it's the same advice today as it would be 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago. Human nature doesn't change. The challenges change, but human nature doesn't. So for me, that's the answer. What do you think, Tim?
I will focus on that. I appreciate it, but I will say that I do look longingly back at my I'm 62. I look longingly back at my earlier epochs that I lived through, and at my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation. But anyway, thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Tim. Yeah, you're most welcome. We're about the same age. You're a year older than I am, and I can look back and say, wow, it was simpler then. We didn't have the internet then. We didn't have a lot of the things that are challenging now. We didn't have them then, but we had other things then. So there, it always seems to be something. And each generation has to go through it for themselves. This is our turn. One of the things that's benefited me greatly, Tim, is being a student of history. So I am an avid reader of biographies and books on history, etc. And one thing that has struck me in all that reading is that there never seems to be a time that's completely calm. There always seems to be upheaval and threats of various sorts and problems and dangers and things. It just always seems to be that way. For us, it seems maybe more magnified because we have this idea that maybe things were better 50 or 100 years ago than they are now. So anyway, for me, that historical perspective has helped me keep my, you know, keep my sense of perspective. So something else to think about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Good talking to you. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, we have a little audio on this, I know. There is that professor, an assistant professor at a Virginia university, Old Dominion University. I believe it was it yesterday or the day before we played some of the audio of this. I want to say guy.
Do you want to play any of that again? I think we did in a later hour, so people that are driving into work right now might not have heard it.
That's a good point. Okay, so let me set it up just a little bit. Then we'll play that first audio, and then we'll play. Well, we'll get to that. Okay, so he teaches. Well, his name is Alan Walker, A-L-L-Y-N, which I believe is intended to be ambiguous. Is he male or female? Walker uses the pronouns they, them, in discussing a book called A Long Dark Shadow, Minor Attracted People in Their Pursuit of Dignity. Now, this ties in with a new acronym. Well, new, I guess, for many people. Anyway, it's MAPS. I only found out about this in the last month or two. MAPS, Minor Attracted People. It's a way to try to normalize pedophilia. And it's a way to try to mainstream and normalize the idea that, well, it's just another version of sexual orientation. In this case, you happen to be attracted to minors. So anyway, so he's doing his thing. He's an assistant professor. He's now on administrative leave because in a video, he's talking up this whole idea about we should allow minor attracted people to be not stigmatized. So why don't we play what he was saying, and then I'll follow it up with a little bit of commentary. And I have some job advice for him. Since he's out of a job right now, there is another place that he might fit in just fine. Let's play it.
I use the term minor attracted person or MAP in the title and throughout the book for multiple reasons. First of all, because I think it's important to use terminology for groups that members of that group want others to use for them. And MAP advocacy groups like Before You Act have advocated for use of the term MAP. They've advocated for it primarily because it's less stigmatizing than other terms like pedophile. A lot of people, when they hear the term pedophile, they automatically assume that it means a sex offender. And that isn't true, and it leads to a lot of misconceptions about attractions toward minors. I've definitely heard the idea that you brought up, though, that the use of the term minor attracted person suggests that it's okay to be attracted to children. But using a term that communicates who someone is attracted to doesn't indicate anything about the morality of that attraction.
Doesn't indicate anything about the morality of that attraction. Some people are attracted, forgive me for saying this, but some people are attracted to dead bodies. That's a crime, by the way. You go to jail if they catch you doing something like that. So there obviously is a moral component to what you are attracted to. And I won't go down the list. It's too gross to even comprehend it. But what he's saying is wrong, obviously, on the face of it. But this is an example of where he's trying to mainstream this attraction. And I think it's intended to be incremental. So little by little, we start breaking down people's resistance to this. Their repugnance, the way they recoil at that term, pedophile. So we won't use that term anymore. We'll use a different term. We'll use MAPS. Like, gee, we're going somewhere. Let's get out the map and figure out where we're going. Oh, wait, that's a grammar school.
I know where they're going.
I know where they're going if they keep this up. Is that what you have in mind?
That is what I meant, yes.
If they keep this up, Jesus said where they're going to go. So I'm sticking with Jesus on this one.
So you're telling me, so, all right, I interrupted. Keep going.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
You're saying there's a job opportunity for this guy?
Yeah, and you have some audio, I know, and let me just set this up here. So he's out of a job right now, at least temporarily. He's on leave because the school, Old Dominion, they had to snap into action, and the president had to come out with a statement that said, I want to state in the strongest terms possible that child sexual abuse is morally wrong and has no place in our society. This is a challenging time for our university, but I'm confident that we will come together and move forward as a monarch family. So they had to do the obligatory, no, we don't stand for that kind of stuff. We're against that kind of stuff. I guess, you know, they had to do that. And I'm glad they did it. I don't know how, I assume it's sincere, who knows, but they hired that guy. Alan. So Alan's out of a job, Cyrus, at least for the time being. Who knows? I have a feeling he probably is not going to be able to come back to his job under the current circumstances. So you and I were talking about a possible job alternative for him as a comrade. So this is what? This is a national socialist.
Yeah, so you want to go there? Okay.
Yeah, let's go there.
Yeah. So we have that and the Microsoft.
Let's go there.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. That's right. 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 Let's back up to Microsoft. Thank you. Thank you. So let's first see if maybe Alan might fit in at Microsoft.
Hello, everyone. I'm Natalie Gadilla. I'm a Caucasian woman with long blonde hair, and I go by she, her. I'm a product marketing lead here at Microsoft and co-host of the podcast Security Unlocked with this guy.
Yes, that would be me. Hello, everyone. I'm Nick Fillingham. I'm a Caucasian man with glasses and a beard. I go by he, him, and I'm a security evangelist here at Microsoft.
My Pause name is Allison Wines. I'm a senior pro.
Pause for a second. Thank you. What he didn't tell you.
Well, who are you again? You're Patrick Madrid.
Patrick Madrid. And you know my pronouns. You don't need to ask.
All right, all right. Just make
it. I don't need to say it. But no, the most notable thing about that guy was not his glasses or his beard, but his mohawk. So he's bald with a mohawk down the center. And he didn't mention that.
No, he doesn't mention that.
Yeah, I mean, he left out the best part.
Just saying all the boring things about him. Let's talk about that hair, buddy.
So here's the next person who's giving her pronouns.
My name is Allison Wines. I'm a senior program manager in our developer tools division. I'm an Asian and white female with dark brown hair wearing a red sleeveless top. First, we want to acknowledge that the land where the Microsoft campus is situated was traditionally occupied by the Sammamish, the Duwamish, the Snoqualmie, the Suquamish, the Muckleshoot, the Snohomish, the Tulalip, and other Coast Salish peoples since time immemorial.
Blah, 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 blah.
How did she get into that meeting?
I don't know.
Greta Thunberg, she's everywhere.
Blah, blah, blah. So,
by the way, all of those people, all of those groups that they just mentioned, they're using Microsoft products for their casinos. If they have a casino, which is a very common thing, or whatever their business venture might be, how odd it is that they're all making use of Microsoft products. Windows, for example.
Well, and what's the point of mentioning, you know, who owned the land previous, unless she's trying to say that we as the United States white man came in and we took that land. So is she
in which case you should leave.
Right, and they should give it back. But which one of those tribes should she give? Should we be giving the land back to?
Well, because I guess they're going to have to sort that out.
Because they just took it from each other. It's not like this is anything new.
That's true. I mean, human beings have a tendency to show up in a place and conquer and settle and then get conquered and other people settle and then they get conquered and other people settle. It's just sort of a human civilization syndrome. But yeah, you're right. That's a good point. If they're going to acknowledge with the implication that this is ill-gotten gain on the part of Microsoft, that they have their headquarters on land that rightfully belongs to somebody else, then why on earth do they still have that building there? Why on earth hasn't Microsoft vamoosed and given that land to somebody else, at least those people? So that's a very good question. I don't know that that's addressed in this video.
So yeah, that is a possible working, a good working environment for Alan Walker.
Yeah, spelled A-L-L-Y-N. I just want to make sure people understand it's ambiguous. So now let's turn to, so this is a National Socialist Social Democrats?
Right, so I saw this, the Microsoft thing, and it cracked me up. And I mean, it's sad, but I choose to laugh instead of cry. It's less messy. And
try that when you're cutting onions.
So when I was, you know, doing a deep dive into like woke videos, I came across this.
So this is a meeting. Yes, let me give a little color commentary. So this is a meeting in a big auditorium. It's a room full of spoiled kids who are all, you know, in adult bodies, but they're just a bunch of spoiled, petulant children. And they're fussing and fuming because they're trying to have a meeting. And they're so, well, okay, I'll let you hear.
It's but, the so Democratic this is probably, what, 200 Socialist people? Convention, and this is from 2019, so it's a little older, but it's so funny. And
there's like 200 people in this room, right?
Yes, at least. It's a big auditorium.
Yeah, it's a big auditorium. So you got, you know, let's say 200 people, and there could be more. And then you've got the people who are addressing this group coming up to the rostrum. The funniest thing about all this for me, and there are a lot of things that are funny, is the personal point of, personal point of preference? Basically, I can interrupt at any time I want by shouting personal point of preference or whatever it is that they say. So here we go.
If we want to defeat capitalism, we are going to need a party that will organize working people to fight for the demands that we want and to win socialism. Thank you so much.
Great. Right, quick point of privilege. Quick point of
privilege. Point of privilege. That's what it is.
Guys, first of all, James Jackson, Sacramento, he, him. I just want to say, can we please keep the chatter to a minimum? I'm one of the people who's very, very prone to sensory overload. There's a lot of whispering and chatter going on. It's making it very difficult for me to focus. Please, can we just, I know it's, we're all fresh and ready to go, but can we please just keep the chatter to a minimum? It's affecting my ability to focus. Thank you.
Thank you, comrade. Okay, is there a speaker against name,
point
chapter, pronoun?
Privilege. Point of personal privilege.
Yes.
Please do not use gendered language to address everyone.
Okay.
Quick point of privilege once again. Quick point of privilege once again. Hi, James Jackson, Sacramento DSA, he, him. I have already asked people to be mindful of the chatter of their comrades who are sensitive to sensory overload, and that goes double for the heckling and the hissing. It is also triggering to my anxiety. Your need to express yourself is important, but your need to express yourself should not trump or over...
And additionally, with the noise issue...
Pause for a
like,
second.
Avoid hissing.
Pause for a second. I thought it was funny that he's using a legitimate word. Your need to hiss and boo doesn't trump my... And then he stumbles because he realizes he just said the word Trump. He's looking for the exit. How
happened.
Do I get out of this now?
Uh-huh.
And he played that part. Roll that back. That was particularly good.
Yeah, and so this is so great. And after, if this keeps playing, you can't see it because it's radio, but this guy has his hands straight up over his head. And he's
doing
trying to
hands.
He's trying to say, don't clap because the noise is triggering to sensitive people. And so if you want to clap, just put your hands up in the air.
Jazz that's, hands. That's what it's called. It's jazz hands.
Jazz hands is on the side. I'm doing it right now. And you have it on the side and you're shaking your hands. He has his hands straight up in the air.
Like the referee calling of
touchdown.
Yeah.
Yes, it's good.
Right. But listen, I just want to hear, just because I like listening to this, I want to hear him stumble upon the word Trump and then try to get out of that.
Your need to express yourself is important, but your need to express yourself should not trump or over...
And so
he just gets so confused.
And I actually cut out, him stumbling for a bit because I wanted to get to this next guy.
All right, let's go.
And additionally, with the noise issue, like avoid hissing, avoid waving banners, right? Because there's all sorts of things. If you don't know what to do, show up these, right? I'm sure there's lots of
just
ways
put your hands
to communicate
straight up in the air
to each other without needing to rely on something that's going to hurt somebody else. We have quiet rooms that are available. There's a range of options of these, right? Please don't go into that space with anything that's like
an
aggressive
scent.
These
are quiet rooms
for
adults, not for adults with children.
We don't want to put people in stressful situations that they don't consent to, right? And there are right-wing infiltrators who are trying to get in here, but it's going to be really traumatic for people if we're not making an affirmative effort to de-escalate each other and de-escalate ourselves, right? Take a deep breath. And feel better before you say anything.
It does feel better.
Don't really talk to anybody who doesn't have a credential, especially if you claim to be from the press. You have no idea who that person is. Please do not talk to anybody who identifies themselves as a member of the press without having credentials. Don't talk to cops.
So basically, don't talk to anybody.
Oh, I hope there's more. I hope there is an hour more of that.
It is all
online. Is that
online.
It? That's all we get?
Just go onto just YouTube and I typed woke. And
all
it's
right,
a
so.
Endless. It's a rabbit hole of craziness.
Yeah. Now, Cyrus, I don't want to put you in a stressful situation that you don't consent to.
Please don't.
But I'm going to have to ask you to de-escalate yourself, okay? Can you start de-escalating, please?
That's triggering to me to use that word, de-escalate.
Thank you, comrade. You didn't give your pronouns, though. Oh, wait. Quick point of privilege. Quick point of privilege.
Point of privilege. We need to go to break. Point of privilege.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so we're going to go to break. I hope that doesn't trigger anybody. It perhaps is a stressful situation that you didn't consent to, but we do have to take a break, and then we'll come back and de-escalate right after this. These people actually exist out there. They really exist.
This flute is triggering.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. The number is 888-914-9149. Let's go to Nancy in Dayton, Ohio. Good morning, Nancy.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to try to be halfway intelligent here, if I could possibly pull that off. So I know you're going to know exactly where I'm talking about in the Bible. I don't, but it's when God finally relents, acquiesces to the screaming and yelling about the abortion thing, or not the abortion, excuse me, divorce thing, and says to Moses, okay, I'll let you guys do it under certain conditions, but okay.
Yeah.
First
question
I have is why?
Oh, sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to mention that in Matthew 19, beginning in verse 1, Jesus starts talking about that. And so Jesus there describes this. Is that what you're thinking of? Is that the passage you have in mind?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's Matthew 19, beginning in verse 1.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. But okay, just the notion that God did, for lack of a better word, give in, or lack of... Mm-hmm. better two words, give in to their demands and their moanings and complainings. He did acquiesce to some degree, correct?
Yeah, verse 8 says, Jesus speaking, "For your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for unchastity and marries another commits adultery."
Okay, so it was Moses that gave them the permission to do it then?
Yes. So Moses...
Okay, well, that's where I got goofed up.
Yeah, no problem.
Because I thought Moses was appealing to God, and God said, okay, fine, go tell him it's all right.
No, Jesus is saying here, he's describing what happened, and he's not indicting Moses as doing anything wrong, per se, just that Moses, he relented, I guess, and permitted this to take place. And it's in a way similar, perhaps, to how some of the patriarchs, they had multiple wives, you know, so it wasn't merely one man, one woman, but this would, I think, fall into the same category, that because God was still dealing with his people in a more rudimentary way, that he overlooked certain things, he permitted certain things. But you notice that Jesus brings it back to, but in the beginning, this was not so.
It wasn't so,
and,
right. Well, I guess I guess my takeaway from all of that is still the same as when I placed my call to you to begin with. And that is, there was an allowance made. There was an okay, all right. Don't like it, don't love it, don't prefer it, shouldn't have been that way, wasn't that way for long, but okay, all right, I'm not going to make a big, huge, I'm not going to have a hissy fit about it, is what I kind of take from there, which then leads me to think of more current day situations, and never mind all the situations in past generations, but currently, like it kind of feels to me like a kid who wants a cell phone, and mom and dad say no, and then finally, okay, all right. Or even more specific to the church, the whole Eucharist thing and the abortion thing, and some of the bishops being okay with, you know, politicians, and we know who I'm talking about, receiving the Eucharist, and even Pope Francis not coming out very strongly about it, kind of giving it seems to me that God set a precedent for, okay.
But let me stop
there's
you,
a lot
though.
Of wiggle room. If there's, okay.
Let me stop you, though, because God did not do that. Moses did. So Jesus doesn't say, well, back in the day, God said that you could do this. He says Moses permitted you to do this.
Yeah, but why did Moses get punished for it?
He did not get punished for that.
I know. I'm saying why didn't
he? Oh, you say why didn't he? Oh, I see. Well, Moses had his moments, and Moses had his moments, and he actually did get punished for a number of them in the end when he was not permitted to enter into the promised land. He died in view of the promised land, but he was not allowed to enter into it. So like when he was told by the Lord to strike the rock once and he struck it twice, suggesting that he doubted that God would perform the miracle of the water coming out of the rock, things of that nature. Moses was, you know, he was a great man. He was a great saint, but he was not always up to snuff, you might say, when it came to his relations with God. But he nonetheless was a great man. So I would say Jesus is gently here describing a deficiency of Moses. He's not ascribing it to God. He's saying that, well, Moses allowed this, but I say to you that from the beginning, God made them male and female, and he talks about one man and one woman. So Jesus, in essence, he sort of pulls this back into where it should be, even though he acknowledges that Moses was a bit lax on that topic. You see?
Well, there's the rub right there, a bit lax. maybe some people say, oh, okay, so Pope Francis is a bit lax. It seems like it's more important than you shouldn't be a bit lax. If it's that big a deal, and it is, I mean, I believe that it is.
So is this question like really about Pope Francis?
Well, it's not just about Pope Francis. Okay. It's not. It's I don't understand why God didn't come down like a ton of bricks on Moses for allowing it. And didn't that set a precedent for us in future generations to kind of acquiesce to, okay, well, if you scream and yell loud enough, well, all right. That's what it seems
kind of did. It kind of did. Has God landed on you and crushed you every time you've committed a sin? Or was God ever patient with you?
Well, I think that's a rhetorical question, and so I can give the answer to that. But I guess I'm...
But I think it is a rhetorical question, but it is still a valid question. God, thankfully, is patient with us and usually does not land on us, does not smite us, if we want to use that term, every time we say or do something that is lax or dumb or malicious. God is patient with us. And it seems to me that that is the essence of what Jesus is pointing to there with regard to Moses.
Yeah.
I mean, had you been God or had I been God, would we have punished Moses and told him to stop it? Probably. But God has his ways. And he permits things to happen that are not necessarily what he wants for us, but he permits things to play out. I think this is one of them. And you know, with regard to Pope Francis, I wasn't trying to quarrel with you. I just wondered if maybe your real question had to do with Pope Francis, but maybe
no,
I misunderstood you.
No, it doesn't. I just thought that was, that's just a very current example of what I'm talking about. You know, it just seems like, I know I'm being repetitive, but I just think, I don't know. It just sounds like acquiescing to me, like, and therefore maybe not intending to, but nevertheless sending the message across generations about the marriage issue and divorce issue and all kinds of issues. That, all right, you know, there's some wiggle room here. That's just what it seems like to me. Now maybe I'm wrong, but it feels that way to me.
Understood.
Feels like it's a green light. You know, to future things. Kind of like we talk about the cell phones a lot with parents and, you know, don't give them cell phones. And I agree with you because that just leads to all kinds of other stuff. And if you give into the cell phone, well, then what's the next thing you're going to give into? Kind of it sets off a bunch of dominoes, I guess, falling is sort of what it seems like to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just draw your attention, Nancy, back to Matthew chapter 19. And maybe that'd be a good thing to meditate on for a while. Just read it and pray about it and meditate. Because I think what you'll see there is that Jesus is correcting the very problem that you're aware of. In other words, you're acknowledging a problem with Moses, and he did not enforce this. He'll let it go. And, you know, give him an inch and they'll take a mile kind of thing. But Jesus reigns all that in. So Jesus actually corrected that problem definitively when he said, this is what happened, this is what Moses did, but I tell you, from now on, One man, one woman, no divorce. No divorce and remarriage. Okay. So I see that as kind of the, you know, the reaching that happy ending of what you're rightly acknowledging as a problem. Jesus, he basically says, no more. We're done with that. So I don't know if that's consoling to you, but I think that's, for me, that's the main thing.
And I will read that over and over and over and think about it and ponder. I will do that.
Awesome. Well, you're raising an important topic, that's for sure.
Well, thanks for everything you do, Patrick. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Nancy. Good to talk to you. My favorite person in the whole wide world is named Nancy. So we have some simpatico going on here, Nancy. Thank you so much for the call. Let's go now to...
I hope my wife is listening right now.
I forgot you have that doll in the control room.
Mr. Sunshine, yay!
Yay. Let's go to Jason in southern Minnesota. Hi, Jason.
Oh, hello. So I just had a quick question for you. I was looking at buying a copy of the Church Fathers, and I was looking at the Rick Brannon translation. I was wondering if you knew if one is better than the others or
who's anything. Who's the publisher for that one? I'm not familiar with that translator.
Okay, I think his book is called The Apostolic Fathers, I believe.
Who's the publisher?
And it's just a council. I don't have it in front of me, but it's like a lot of the other ones, like by Lightfoot and stuff, that has like the letters of Ignatius and some of those kind of, you know, some of those more basic ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have that set. I have the entire set in my library, and that goes to, I don't know, 28 volumes or something like that. I've used that one for many years and have really enjoyed it. Lightfoot was a Protestant scholar, but in this capacity, he's not putting a Protestant spin on anything. He's just offering the translation, and it's a very good translation. There are some newer ones. I think that the Coming Home Network, which is run by Marcus Grodi, I believe that they published a new translation of some of the early Christian works like the Didache and maybe the Epistle of St. Clement to the Corinthians. Mm-hmm. I'd have to double check, but that's by, trying to remember his name. I should remember it, but I don't. But he's he's still living, and he's a convert from Protestantism. He's a Catholic, and he did a new translation of some of those documents. But if you're looking for an entire set of the Church Fathers, I'm not aware of any new translations that have come out, you know, for all of those volumes.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be an entire set. It's like a one-volume book, you know.
So. I see. Well, if you're looking for a one-volume book, I don't think you can go wrong with the one that Catholic Answers publishes. It's called The Fathers Know Best, and it's a compilation. It's not a translation. It's a compilation of other translations that come from Schaff and Lightfoot and Jurgens. So the William Jurgens three-volume set, Faith of the Holy Fathers, is sort of the gold standard in terms of a systematic look at what the Church Fathers taught on a variety of topics. But not everybody wants to deal with three volumes. And also the print is very small. It's not easy for older people, for example, to read. So the essence of those three volumes has been distilled into the one volume called The Fathers Know Best. You might want to check that out.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I appreciate it. There's a patristic scholar, Khalid Anatolios, who was, I believe he was professor of patristics at Boston College for many years, and he wound up becoming a priest. But he is another living translator and scholar on patristics. There are any number of them, but he's somebody who's still active in that field. You could look him up as well. I appreciate the call. I always like talking about the Church Fathers. Let's go to a break, and we'll come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. The number to call if you want to be on the air is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back. There are a line or two open. If you'd like to call in, this would be the perfect time to do it. They get jammed up very quickly. 888-914-9149. I hope that you by now have signed up for Father Rocky's Advent Meditations. They're free. And every morning during Advent, each day you'll receive by email a little audio commentary from Father Rocky. They're uplifting. They'll give you some hope and encouragement, and couldn't we all use a little bit more of that? Also, it'll help you understand Advent even more clearly, and you'll be able to benefit spiritually from going through Advent with more focus. So these are free, and all you have to do to sign up to get yours is go to relevantradio.com/advent. Put your whatever email address you want them to go to, put it in there, and we'll start sending them to you, and I think you'll like them. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Angeline now in Glendale, California. Good morning.
Good morning, Patrick. Very thankful for your show.
Thanks.
So my father passed away in his sleep. It was very sudden, no signs, and he was young. He was wearing the brown scapular, so wanted to get your thoughts on that. And my family is trying to find peace and healing. You know, got a lot of questions. Was it really his time? So we want to get some book recommendations on Death of a Loved One and Purgatory.
Definitely. Well, may he rest in peace, and I send you my heartfelt condolences. How long ago did he pass away?
Thank you. Like 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. So the family's still grieving, I can understand. My grandfather passed away the same way. My dad's dad died that way. Died in his sleep. He had, I think it was a brain aneurysm. So he went to bed in the evening and he never woke up. So it seems to me that that would be a very, if you had to choose a way to go, that's a very good way to go. Mm-hmm. So God bless
him.
Okay, so the brown scapular is a sacramental that is an outward sign of one's devotion to Our Lady. And there are many, there are many pious notions surrounding the brown scapular of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. One of them, and I want to say with a word of gratitude, something that I recently learned, there was a listener who sent me some documentation that I was unfamiliar with. And the documentation shows that what is known as the Sabbatine privilege, meaning that it's alleged that Our Lady had promised that she would intercede for the person who dies. And if that person is in purgatory, then that person would be free from purgatory on or before or by the following Saturday after that person's death. And the documentation was very helpful to me because it demonstrated that that actually was never something that was verified that Our Lady said. It was a sort of an idea that arose over time. And some popes had even told the Carmelite order, hey guys, don't say that because that's not something that the church says. That's not something that the church approved. It's a pious notion. But I think it's very widespread. So I offer you that by way of a little footnote to all this. But the main thing is that the scapular is a sign of that person's devotion to Our Lady. And the understanding is that she intercedes in a particular way after death for the souls of those who have died who are friends of hers. So those who pray the rosary, those who wear the scapular. It doesn't mean that it's an automatic ticket to heaven or anything like that. It just means that Our Lady will not forget those people and will pray for them. And of course, her prayers are very powerful. So I think you can rest in that and know that if he was devoted to Our Lady, she will certainly not neglect to pray for him and intercede for him.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I wish you and your family healing and consolation during this difficult time. Thank you. Let's go to Joan now in Grants, New Mexico. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
How do you decide which charities that you're going to donate to, especially at this time of year when you get like 50 to 100 requests in the mail?
Yeah, I know that feeling. It seems that more of it goes into the trash can than is kept and brought home. Well, for me personally, Joan, and I don't know if this is part of your question, but I try to diversify our charitable giving so that we're giving to a variety of different causes and issues. So rather than give only to one particular group outside of the parish, of course, I try to diversify. so that a lot of different groups are being helped. For me, that seems to be a good way to do it. It's just a suggestion. But as far as the charities themselves go, you'd want to make sure that they're reputable. You'd want to make sure that they are honest in and transparent in how they handle the money that you entrust to them. Does that money go simply to fundraising? I mean, there are some organizations, let's just face it, they fundraise so that they can fundraise. And very little of what they take in goes to the mission. It goes to more fundraising and things like that. So I would be careful, you know, to ascertain where does the money go? Are they transparent, et cetera? It sounds like you want to say something. Go ahead, John.
Is there any objective source who can rate charities concerning honesty or produce financial statements or, they all
there
say
is.
They're giving to the poor and they're all Catholic and they're different missions. And so how do you judge the honesty, integrity, and the usefulness and what percentage goes to fundraising, et cetera?
I can tell you. It's called GuideStar. Go to GuideStar.com, and there they have for any significant sort of charity, 501c3 nonprofit group, they're required to publicly disclose their was it the 990s or 10? No, it would be the 990, I think. So they have to file their taxes and post it publicly online for inspection. So you can go through their tax returns. You can see, where does this money go? Hopefully, and I should say one of the important things to look for if you're going to be giving money to a charity is to look for whether or not they have their financials posted publicly like they're supposed to. Also, are their financial statements audited? So if there's an audit, then that gives you another level, another layer of certitude.
Well, the Vatican and the bishops are not under that obligation.
I do know that. And the reason is because according to the IRS code, if you're a church, you're not, or you don't have to be a church technically speaking, but there are certain charities that fall into the category that churches fall into. And those entities are not required to post those things. But typically, if you're dealing with some organization that's helping the poor or doing something else like that, almost always you're going to be able to find their information. So GuideStar, is it .org? It's either .org or .com, one of the two, is where you can begin looking at that. Okay? Thank you, Joan. 888-914-9149. One other thing, as long as I'm at it, I'll just mention. Be aware also that there are groups out there who they're always like, sign our petition to tell this terrible movie company to take this movie down, or sign our petition so that we can get this done or get that done. And I offer you this for your consideration. Those kinds of things almost always never produce anything. They never actually accomplish anything except to get you into their mailing database so that they can send you by, U.S. mail, they can send you their pitch letters. Be aware that when you sign up for a quote-unquote, sign our boycott, sign our petition, almost always those things don't amount to anything. But you will then be on that group's mailing list, and they will mail you their appeals for money from here to Kingdom Come. So that's another thing to be on the lookout for. Let's go now to Anita in Tinley Park, Illinois. Tinley Park is in Chicagoland, isn't it?
Hi. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, Anita. Is Tinley Park in the general Chicago area?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought I had seen it before. Well, good to have you on the program.
Very good. Thank you, Patrick. Well, I'm calling in reference to an earlier caller regarding Matthew 19 on divorce and how Moses had approved, but then Jesus cleared up the matter. Mm-hmm. I know that the church's authority has the authority, I should say, to nullify, as if I understand correctly, that the marriage ceremony took place, but there was not a sacrament due to a certain list of rule of things that may have not been present at the time. I was just wondering, do you know when the very first annulment was? And if there is a saint that had gone through an annulment, was then married, died in that state of being married, Patrick. Mm-hmm. You know, I go around and around. I've walked those shoes, and I have to surrender to the authority of the church and knowing, you know, guided by the Holy Spirit. But your thoughts on that, please.
Sure. I don't think I can help insofar as, like, who had the first annulment. I wouldn't know. Probably that information is lost in the mists of time by now. Maybe somebody knows, perhaps. I just don't, I'm afraid. Well, here's the thing to remember. The church cannot annul a valid marriage. And so the annulment process results in either the church says, no, you are validly married, or what's known as a declaration of nullity, meaning that the marriage was null from the beginning. So the church can't, you know, wave its hand, so to speak, over a valid marriage and annul it. But rather, the church in that process is looking for any indication that there was an impediment. I think that's what the word you were looking for, an impediment that would have prevented a valid marriage at the very beginning. And if the church can determine with moral certitude that there was such an impediment, then the church can declare that this marriage was null from the beginning. So it's the validity of the marriage that's in question. Was this a valid marriage? You can have a valid marriage that's not sacramental. In the case of two baptized Catholics, the presumption is that it's valid and sacramental. But the annulment process is looking at the question of validity. Is this marriage valid? So I don't know if have you been through the annulment process by chance?
I have. Yes, I have. And I've always wondered, you know, I love the church, and I always would love to know of a saint. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm still, you know, that went through the annulment and died in the state of her life as a married woman. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say remarried because that first one was not valid, but married. And then was, you know, sainthood, Patrick. That's where I'm. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm still questioning the authority, or I'm something that I walked through years ago. Mm-hmm. And I had never really read my Bible, and I had a medical scare. And in the middle of the night, I picked up my Bible and opened it, and I opened it to Matthew 19. Those married, divorced, remarried will, you know, commit adultery. I had been through an annulment, and I was married at that time and have been for almost 35 years. Mm-hmm. But it was, I know the Lord uses everything for the good, and it was for me to understand our Catholic Church, which I have, you know, all honor to the Lord, grown tremendously with. Mm-hmm. But I just have searched high and low to see if there was a saint that died that had been through the annulment process and was married at the time of her death and you know, beatified. And so I just was curious.
Yeah, it sounds like a great topic for someone to research and write about. Yeah, I'm just unaware myself about that. Let me recommend a book to you, though, Anita. I think you'll find this very helpful. It's called Annulments in the Catholic Church, Straight Answers to Tough Questions. The author is Ed Peters. He's both a civil and a canon lawyer. So he's got standing to give you very, very definite answers to these kinds of questions. That might be some good Advent reading for you.
Absolutely. Okay. All right, Patrick, thank you.
You're welcome, Anita. Great talking to you. 888-914-9149. Looking at the clock here, I'm tempted. How about Diana in East Hanover, New Jersey? Good morning, Diana.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. We have about 90 seconds before we have to wrap it up.
Okay. Real quick, I'm calling in response to one of the callers that was talking about when there's so much evil in the world, what are we supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
I've stumbled across on YouTube the Surrender Novena by Father Dolindo Rotolo.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of it. And he was in Naples, a stigmatist Capuchin priest in last century, and apparently Jesus appeared to him and gave him this novena, and the crux of it is Jesus is saying, with everything, give it to Jesus and say, you take care of it. And it says, when you see evil growing instead of weakening, do not worry. Close your eyes and say to me with faith, thy will be done. You take care of it. And this priest is up for, you know, they're trying to get him beatified. And he was a very holy man and wrote books on the Holy Spirit and a friend of Padre Pio.
Okay.
And this surrender novena seemed to be becoming popular and cropping up all over the place. So it's just
That's
a very nice way to have faith in Christ that he will take care of all these things.
That's a good point, Diana. Thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate it. And just my little 2 cents, I'll add on the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. I will be right back with hour 2 and your phone calls right after this quick timeout. Please stay right there.